We talked about voice before, and one of the reasons I think that your podcast is so successful and so seductive, and I don't miss them, is that it has a real human voice. It doesn't feel read, even though I know damn well that you've worked on them really hard. Your written prose feels spoken and vice versa, which I mean is high praise. Podcasting is a relatively new form. Why did you gravitate toward it in such a complete way? It's not. This is not some avocation. In fact, at a certain point, you know, you've done work where the book is an extension of the podcast, as with the Bomber book. So tell me about that and your attraction to it.
Well, there's certain kinds of stories you could write it, but it's not nearly as fun in written form.
Right.
So there's a certain kind of story which lends itself beautifully to audio, where audio permits you, you could be more playful. You can get away with stuff.
What does that mean?
Get away with stuff.
Yeah.
There's no critical infrastructure. So there's like, no one's going to...
So I don't understand. You can be more full of shit?
No, you can be like...
You have to be... You're careful. I mean...
No, we're not making stuff up.
Right.
What I'm saying is people are more accepting of a kind of playful outlandishness. So part of the Georgetown Massacre episodes, the tongue is in the cheek, right? Even as I'm right. Making a substantive point.
And you feel you can do that more than in Caslon type magazine?
You would not let me write that for The New Yorker. You take it out.
Because I would feel what?
It wouldn't work. It's like, it's hard to explain, because a lot of what's playful about audio is stuff you're doing with your voice, right? So I can adopt a tone of voice that says we're
kidding
messing
around. We're having a fun.
Right.
We're playing
or
with ideas.
Can, yeah. Like there's a character in the Georgetown Massacre. It's part of it was a turn, and we meet there's a guy who's charged in a case, and he takes as his lawyers the two greatest defense lawyers in the country, Roy Black and Howard Shrebnick. These two guys in Miami. And we meet Roy and Howard. Now, the first crucial thing is, if I'm writing a print version, you'll meet Roy and Howard. I describe them. You got to hear, when you hear them, it's just so much better. And you realize, right. And then when you're describing them, I can describe them in a much more colorful way when I know you're going to hear their voice. Right? I can't explain it better than that, but there is something about, Howard has got long hair and rides a motorcycle in the early morning hours and looks like a movie star and does this, he does a direct examination of the defendant's daughter that is just so masterful. I mean, and I was reading, you read the transcript and you come to this thing and you're like, because people like you and I, our business fundamentally is not about, we're not in the writing business, we're in the interviewing business, mm-hmm. right? We only write because we've interviewed somebody. It's really interviewing.
You think of it that way?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah, the whole game is interviewing. It's not,
okay.
Writing is, I would never write something without it. The idea of writing something just without having sat down first to talk to someone is unthinkable to me.
Right.
So when you, a defense lawyer is...
Just to stipulate, that's the fun part for you? That's the juice of it, above all?
Well, I don't find the writing part hard. I find the writing part is just, it's just a matter of sitting down and
Wow. Don't tell any writers that.
No, but that's the gift of being at the Washington Post for 10 years. It used to be hard, and it wasn't. By the time I was done there, I was on the phone dictating the story. Like, they solved that problem. The hard part is, can I sit down with somebody and can I understand who they are and what they're trying to say and represent that in a way that's meaningful and powerful? And all of that is stuff you get from the interview. You can't make it up after the fact. So you have to, I was doing this summer, I spent like 20 hours, maybe I've forgotten how many hours, 10, 15, 20 hours with this woman. I was a psychologist, and it was incredible. Like, she agreed, thank God, to sit with me for that long.
Who is this?
I'm telling you. Steal it. You're like the competition, for goodness sake.
That hurts me very much.
Yeah, not telling you. Not telling you. And it was the same thing with the Paul Simon thing that we did.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Where he, you know, he sat for 40 hours. And the whole thing, the trick, not the trick, the what's interesting, what's hard about that was not writing it up afterwards. All those problems were solved in the interview. The trick was, when we were talking to him...
Sorry to interrupt, which is the worst thing you can do in an interview, but I've interviewed Paul Simon. He's not immediately easy.
No, he's not easy.
And you had him for, you know, on and on and on, and it got richer and richer and richer. And he, something you did, something about you, your patience, your interest, your silence, whatever it was, drew out a guy that I think it's fair to say is not immediately thrilled with being the process of being interviewed.
He was. I don't understand why he was so. He was. He kept on. I kept on saying I'm done, and then he would say no. Let's. When are we meeting again? And we would. Me and Bruce, my friend Bruce, did it together, and Bruce and I would look at each other.
Bruce Headlam.
Yeah. Bruce and I would look at each other like he really wants to do it again. And he would always do it again. And then...
I couldn't believe it.
And I think that, you know, if I was kind of reconstructing why he was so kind of generous with his time, that would be part of it. Part of it was, I think, we were uninterested in the parts of his life that he felt had been picked over.
Mm.
So we're not interested in your marriage to so-and-so.
In a relationship with Art Garfunkel.
But we were really interested in his dad. And I remember there was one moment
Who was a musician.
Who was a musician. I remember there was one time where... Bruce and I asked him some question, and I asked him some question about his dad, and he talked straight for like half an hour, got incredibly emotional, and then he said, I have to stop, and he got up and walked outside. It was like...
Wow.
There was something really deep, and the idea, it's so interesting, and it's that thing, that moment when you're interviewing somebody, first of all, it never gets old. When you tap into something, so we had tapped into something that was real about him, that his relationship to his father, he's a man in his 70s, his father's been dead for 30 years. He eclipsed his father in every conventional way by a million miles. And yet, and he was still, you realize he was still writing about his father. He was still dreaming about his father. Mm. His father was still like with him. You know, it was just such a kind of like, but that, when you get there, and that took a long time for us to get there. When you get there with somebody, that, like I said, it's not, the writing is not hard.